Payne and Pendergast. Seth is waving his hand like he's got something important to say.
I don't have to say. We were talking about this during the break. There's somebody that Sean and I both know who reminds us a little bit of Jordan Hudson, who's Belichick's girlfriend. And I realized, like, okay, you don't ever say that to a person. You never tell a person, like, hey, has anybody ever told you they look like? Especially if it's somebody who's a person of controversy.
So you're saying when we next see this person, you're going to make sure not to do that?
Oh, God, yes. Okay. Yeah. No, Sean, do you know how many times in my life, like who? I'm 50 years old. Yeah. The Office came out, what, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Does somebody really think they're going to be the first person to notice that I look like Ed Helms? Or that guy from the dentist or whatever they might say. So whenever they say, hey, as soon as you utter the words, has anybody ever told you that you look like, shut up. Yes, people have told them that before. And there's a good chance that they're not all that enthusiastic about it. I don't mind the Ed Helms. The Gary Busey I could get less of.
Gary Busey?
I get Gary Busey's kid, whatever the hell his name is.
Okay, I don't know who that is,
Gary Busey, saying I look like Gary Busey's kid makes me wistful for the days when people used to think I was John Rocker. I would much rather be John Rocker than Gary Busey's kid.
Hang on, Ben was about to say something. Who's Gary Busey?
His name's Jake.
Jake Busey. Jake Busey.
Apparently, I look like Jake Busey sometimes.
Is he famous? I mean, is he?
He was in, he's been in stuff.
Yes,
I think he was the bully in Edward Scissorhands.
Okay,
wasn't that Jake Busey?
I don't know. Ben shaking.
Oh no, never mind. We'll go down a rabbit hole here. That wasn't Jake Busey. That was a kid from 16 Candles, except he got all beefed up.
Anthony Michael Hall.
It was Anthony Michael Hall.
Okay,
yeah.
Never seen Edward Scissorhands.
Really?
Never seen it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Is that a shocking one that I haven't seen?
No, I think that's more of a, it's kind of a chick flick.
I'm not a huge Johnny Depp guy. He was Edward Scissorhands, right? Johnny Depp? Yeah. Not a big Johnny. I liked him in Donnie Brasco, but that's because I like mob movies. But that's a crossover hit for me. But I'm not a huge Johnny Depp guy, in part because he's very strange. he's very weird.
It's a Tim Burton movie too, which is all, like, that's naturally weird. Were you at any point in your childhood a goth kid?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No,
yeah.
No.
You might not be into it then. Yeah. No. You never dabbled in gothitude.
Not that I remember. But my high school friend Rob Stone is joining us at 9 o'clock today on the show. The host.
Was he a goth kid?
No, he was definitely not a goth kid. No, he was like class president, captain of the soccer team. Like he was the dude. Yeah, he's a. Host of Big Noon Saturday. He's going to join us to preview Texas and Ohio State.
The goth chicks always intrigued me. I was always I always had like flirtatious friendships with some of the goth chicks.
Because
you always felt that they disapproved. You feel like, she totally disapproves of me. I'm going to show her that I'm not your typical movie jock, all right? I'm not the guy that bullied Edward Scissorhands.
Right. Yeah, you want to, you're above that.
Yeah. There's something about the white makeup too. It just kind of got me like, whoa.
See, it didn't get to me like that back then. I didn't like it, but it is one of those things. Like in retrospect, I'm like, I wish I could go back and tell 17-year-old Sean, give the goth chicks a chance. I wish I could do that. I can't.
No, and then I just wear a Cure T-shirt to school just to
that's
get them
it,
thinking.
Man.
You know?
Yeah.
That's right. You can like the Cure and Muscles.
That's true. Yeah. I'll be a little emo for you. It's fine. Yeah. All right, Nick Caserio. How do the Texans now? The team that you're part of now, this group, this franchise, how is it now compared to the first 2 years that you were the general manager of this team?
Yeah, no different. I think our program is very process-oriented.
Pause. The question was actually, I think Landry asked the question. I should have set this up better. Remember in the first 2 years where Nick was like, hey, we're about process, not results, and everybody got upset at that because the results were so bad? They won 7 games in 2 years. Landry asked Nick yesterday, is that still the case? Are you now that you're winning divisions, is it still process over results?
Yeah, no different. I think our program is very process oriented. If you have a good process in place, hopefully it leads to good results. Sometimes good process doesn't necessarily lead to the best results. But what we've tried to do is just establish some level of consistency on a day-to-day basis, what we're doing on all levels, coaching, scouting, nutrition, player performance in all areas, and just get the right people in the building, understanding that it's a hard business. I mean, you're going to face some adversity. You're going to face, some stretches where things aren't going great. So you're either going to withstand that or you're going to wilt. You know, we feel we can handle, anything that's put in front of us. And, I mean, that's what you want to kind of build. So You just got to focus on the process, because the reality is, Landry, after a game on Sunday, you have to go back and start over, right? So post-game, all right, then you got to rebuild back up to get back to that same point. So you just don't go from one week to the next. So if you have good process, I mean, D'Amico and I both believe that strongly. You know, and having good process, being consistent day to day, if there's an area that we can tweak or improve that can enhance our program, we're always going to consider that. And I think as long as we're here, that will be the approach.
Seth, when he's talking about, like, you're going to hit some rough patches, you know, there's going to be some downtimes, I'm listening and I'm like, good sir, you made it through 2021 and 2022. You can get through anything, Nick Caserio.
Yeah, yeah, there's you know, it's tough though. There's times when things are really bad where you just become callous to some of the adversity. It's when things are going well, but then all of a sudden things don't go as expected or as planned. Yeah. That can be a bigger hurdle to overcome, because you gotta, like, all of those positives that you've built and, like, having the right kind of attitude and everything, it really gets tested then. That's when, you know, like if you fail in times of struggle, how small is your strength, or whatever the quote
That's
is.
That's a great point. I'm just thinking of, like, specifics from last year. Like, last year there were high expectations. Losing Stephon Diggs to a torn ACL and then losing Tank Dell to a torn everything in his knee probably was more stressful for Nick than anything that was going on during 2022, let's say. You know, like, when you're just losing, you're losing.
Proverbs 24:10, if you falter in a time of trouble, how small is your strength? That's the...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So you're like, yeah, you're puffing your chest like, hey, everything's going great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're the cock of the walk. Yeah. Did you see how many players we have in the NFL top 100? And then all of a sudden you lose three games in a row.
Oh.
And okay, how small is your strength?
Oh.
You're like, what do you, I mean, listen, Mr. Big Shot.
Yeah.
Like, is this too hard for you? That's when you get tested.
I didn't like that. I've been really enjoying this six players in the top 58 that we've got.
You didn't think I was going to drop a 24-10 on your ass?
No, not at all. Not at all. All right, so here's one more from Nick Caserio. He's been asked this quite a bit, but I thought that there was some interesting little phrases in here that Nick had when he was asked, how's your relationship with D'Amico evolved?
Our relationship has been really good from the start. I think it's grown each year. And, you know, I'm glad he's our coach. Really wouldn't want to work with anybody else. You know, and hopefully it continues to lead to pretty good results, and we can keep moving the organization in a good direction. I mean, I say this humbly, but I think, you know, our program is pretty respected league-wide. It's because of the players and because of the people in the building. People want to be here. You know, when a player basically says, look, I hope I don't get claimed so I can go to your practice squad, I mean, honestly, it speaks to where your program is. So, you know, we've come a long way. I mean, look, I was here for, you know, 21. Nobody was saying that. So, like, we're obviously in a different spot. So hopefully we can just keep doing the right things, being consistent day to day, treat people the right way, just be honest with them and tell them the truth. And it starts at the top with him. Now, he won't take credit, you know, because he's so humble and his nature isn't. But everything starts with him. And then it disseminates throughout the rest of the building. So I've said this multiple times. My job is to support him in any capacity possible, whatever that entails. And for as long as I'm in the position that I'm in, then that's my commitment to him and to the organization.
You know, it's been a while since we've heard. There used to be quite a few people that thought that Caserio would never be on board with D'Amico because it wasn't his choice, or whatever narratives people had or their ideas of how it went. We haven't heard much of that since really the beginning of last season. Yeah. I think you were still hearing that after the 2023 season. But for me, and you know how I was on record before as they hired D'Amico, that I thought that D'Amico and Nick were going to be a really, really good fit.
You were the first one I heard say that they're going to be a really good pair together.
Yeah, I don't. And as you know, also, I think that, you know, I read every book that anybody writes about Bill Belichick. I read all the articles, knowing full well that 25% of it is garbage. But there's just some common themes to the way that Belichick operates that are very similar to the way that D'Amico operates. They have vastly different personalities, but there's just a few core things about focusing on the things that really matter, being able to separate a lot of the nonsense from the things you do care about, and what they expect from their players. Most critically, I think D'Amico and Belichick, I think they look at the intangibles in almost exactly the same way.
Yeah.
You take a player that D'Amico really likes, is probably a player that Belichick really likes, and vice versa. And do they have an eye for getting those guys and then keeping them and getting the best out of them. I think that's a part of D'Amico that I knew he had just by knowing the way he operates that I figured that Caserio would really, really like.
You know what I've noticed about Nick when he gets asked about stuff, you know, when he gets asked a question like that, and he does acknowledge that things are better now than they were before. That's just factual. You know, better now than the first 2 years that he was here. He never says the word Super Bowl. You know, he never says, like, hopefully we keep getting good results and we keep moving things in a positive direction. And I think it's probably symptomatic of the first cut we played where you don't talk about results and things like
that. Well, that's exactly this is one of the most frustrating things in the world. And again, I read Belichick's autobiography, and I like going through Belichick's autobiography or his whatever he calls this latest book of his. And looking at the things that people are just the advice they're not going to follow, or that if anybody else said it, people would say, oh, that guy doesn't have a winning mentality. I don't know. Because Belichick, Caserio a few years ago said, hey, we can't control whether we win or lose. We can control the process. And people were furious about that. You go ahead and look up Mike Krzyzewski, John Wooden, Bill Belichick, any number of the all-time great coaches. They all have quotes that are exactly like that.
Yeah.
But unless you say it as you're sitting on top of six championships, people don't want to hear it.
They just
don't want. Krzyzewski would say multiple different quotes of Krzyzewski saying, you know, we really can't control whether we win or lose. What we can control is the process.
Yeah.
And that's what you worry about. Krzyzewski says it, and like, yeah, cool, makes sense. Anybody else in the world says it, what a loser.
Yep.
Can't believe this guy doesn't even want it. Belichick would basically talk about how you can control, be a team that's good enough to be consistently getting to the conference championship.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, there's a little bit of randomness involved in it. You know, you're going up against really good teams. There's injuries. There's the bounce of the ball. And Belichick can say that because he's won a boatload of Super Bowls. Anybody else says it, like, oh my God, I can't believe you're not trying to win a Super Bowl.
Oh, no,
what a bum.
You were absolutely, I mean, that's why Landry asked the question yesterday, I think, because when Nick said that back in 2021 and 2022, like, it's not about the results, it's about the process.
Yeah.
People were like, yeah, well, it's you won three games last year. Of course you're going to say that. And it's
right.
But now they're winning division titles, and the answer is the same now.
Nick Saban, same thing. Yeah. Boatload of quotes about the process and not worrying about results and everything.
Yep.
But people don't want to follow that advice because they've watched so many damn movies. They're like, no, the coach of the two teams that merged has to give a big speech at the beginning of the game. And that's when everybody realizes, hey, we're all the same on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, get off my porch. Get off my lawn. Yeah, sentimental dweebs. Yeah.
Text message. Someone says D'Amico and Nick are like long lost best friends at this point. It's true. They have great respect for each other, man. I think they enjoy working with each other. DJ Bien-Aimé had a good piece yesterday on ESPN.com. He interviewed the McNairs. He interviewed some of the players in West Virginia is where these interviews took place. The headline is why the Texans owners feel Houston is, quote, pretty close, meaning pretty close to getting to where they want to go. Before we dig into some of the nuggets from this article, let's harken back to January. I think this is the Monday after the Texans lost to the Chiefs in the playoffs. That Chiefs playoff loss is the fulcrum of this article. It is a big part of this article, the loss to the Chiefs, whereas in 2023, the Texans felt like, man, we're still pretty far off. They got blown out by the Ravens. The feeling inside the building coming off of that loss to the Chiefs was, man, we got some bad calls. We had bad line play in the fourth quarter on the offensive side of the ball. Here was D'Amico Ryans the Monday after that Kansas City loss, acknowledging they have to get past the divisional round.
I look at this year specifically. I am proud of our guys and for accomplishing what we accomplished this year to win a division, to get into the playoffs, right, get to the divisional round. Like, I'm proud of our guys for that. But for me as a coach, as a competitor, that's not what I put all the work in for, is just to get to the divisional round and just be excited about that just because of where the Texans were before. I'm just supposed to be pleased with getting to the divisional round. That's not why I work. Like, I work to win, and we didn't get the job done. We didn't make enough plays to win the game to get over the hump. So for me, it's like, good year, but not good enough in my mind. And for me, it's how do we take the organization to new heights? So I'm looking at all areas to improve our football team.
If you had said that with more gusto, that could have been a drop that they use on the New Heights podcast, which would bring D'Amico the more fame and accolades that he so desperately wants.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He wants that rub from the Kelce brothers for sure. Well, it's funny because, that is something I noticed in that cut right there. Like, oh, God, he's got a we just got knocked out of the playoffs vibe to him in this cut right here. Like, you can tell that he's not the usual upbeat D'Amico Ryans in that cut. The DJ Bien-Aimé article, there are some interesting quotes in here. I'm going to read an excerpt from the article real quick from the McNairs. Cal McNair told ESPN, "What makes us feel good is the past 2 years. We've had good results, and we're expecting, hopefully, that these roster and offseason decisions turn into something along those lines." Cal McNair offered words of encouragement, telling ESPN in August at the Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia that, quote, "We hope to see us get a little bit better this year." Then Hannah McNair grinned and swiftly interjected, "A lot better."
The dynamic between those two
that's
is
awesome.
So funny in a good way, a good funny way. Because Cal is as laid back as they come. It's almost like a C.J. Stroud and Nick Cayley dynamic.
A little bit.
Nick Cayley's all full of zest and verve, and C.J.'s very laid back. But yeah, Hannah's not. Hannah's got a very take no prisoners approach.
Very much.
If she had grown up in your household, she would have been a huge wrestling fan. I think.
Yeah, she is now. I know that. Yeah.
Is she?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
She, ever since the two of them went to Monday Night Raw a couple years ago, and they got introduced, they did a video of them walking down the ramp and whatnot. Ever since then,
she could cut a promo.
Definitely could cut.
She's always at any given time. It seems like she's biting her tongue.
Yes,
I'm amazed that she can still talk because I feel like when she gets in front of a microphone, she's biting her tongue 50% of the time.
Yeah. More at first, not so much, and now she's getting a little more. It seems like a little more. Cautious.
She's having fun with it. Well, she calls out, talking smack to the Adams family is that's the biggest one where it feels like, oh, that's actual, like she's taking it to the other owners.
Yeah.
She's just she's fighting in her weight class, you know?
Yes.
Like, hey, the players can play the players. The coaches can coach against the other coaches. I'm going to take on the other owners.
That's right. Okay. What do you think of this Titus Howard quote from this article here? Let me read this to you, Seth. DJ says, under Cayley and Popovich, Titus Howard believes the offense fits us the best. Uh-huh. Howard told ESPN, "The biggest difference is our mentality. The type of offense fits a lot of the guys that we have in the room. Being able to start the game off strong as an offensive line and being able to finish games. Also running the ball and then using the run to open up the pass game. Not coming out getting effing negative yards on outside zone runs plays. Stuff that didn't really fit us," end quote.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
The F-bomb adds some juice to that one, right?
Yeah,
there.
I mean, I'd love to. The problem with all of that, though, too, is it's not like the scheme itself is the problem. It was the way the scheme was being executed. And Bobby Slowick just seeming to try to detach himself from the execution problem as much as possible. Every time Bobby Slowick talked about the execution, it felt like he was talking about it as if it was something he wasn't responsible for. Where when you look at the way when that scheme works well, like in, say, San Francisco, like Kyle Shanahan knows exactly what the hell he's doing. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that the San Francisco offensive line over these last 6 or 7 years has been a soft offensive line.
No.
But they know how to execute that scheme, and it's not so easy. It's gotten a lot harder. I was talking to Drew Hodgson, who coaches high school football now, but he runs a version of that scheme because he learned it under Kubiak. And the big difference now between then is that because you can't cut block anymore, it's really like in the NFL especially, it's that much harder to execute that scheme because the cut blocks used to be such a huge part of it.
Yeah.
And by and large, most of the cut blocks that were the bread and butter of that scheme, you're not allowed to do anymore. So the teams that can run it effectively, they got to know what the hell they're doing. And Bobby Slowick just flat out didn't know what the hell he was doing. And Chris Strausser didn't know what he was doing.
Yep. It seems like things are better now. But boy, Titus, little F-bomb right there. F in negative yards. He's the second guy we've quoted this. Well, we didn't quote Damian Pierce. We played the audio. That's the second guy on the show this week that's...
I think part of it, though, too, is, he's saying that the scheme is better suited to what they want to do or what their temperament is. But I think he's probably also taken some personal accountability for that. It's not like he wasn't responsible for any of the negative yardage plays in the run game.
True.
So I think it might just be a matter of like he feels better in this scheme and the way they're operating this year.
Definitely.
As well. And so he's not going to be as responsible for as many negative plays.
ESPN has some bold predictions for all 32 teams. I'm not going to go through all 32 of these, but I'm curious. These are ones that I thought were interesting. Dan Graziano did the piece. So these are all his predictions. It's a long piece. This is a long piece for one person to write. Good job, Dan Graziano. His don't be surprised if he precedes all these with don't be surprised if ... the Texans have the best defense in the NFL.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. I think the two biggest hurdles that they have to overcome or at least improve on compared to last year is A, some of the big plays that are a result of either poor tackling or mental errors in the secondary. You got to get rid of those. And then B, the linebackers and coverage.
Yeah.
Like that's, and they don't have to be incredible. I don't expect all of a sudden one of those guys to be Fred Warner or something, but as a group, they've got to be better in pass coverage. Those are really the two things that are most glaring and, you know, responsible for them not being an absolute top tier defense last year. But it's not like those are very fixable issues, because the linebackers, a lot of the issues were more just like play action recognition and things like that. They were mental, they were reaction time, there were things like that. It's not like you're asking Azeez Alshire to cover a receiver. You know, you're not asking him to be Derek Brooks and cover tight ends and receivers down the seam all the time.
Yeah.
They've got to be more on point with some of their reads.
My reaction to that, you know, again, these are bold. They're supposedly bold predictions. Don't be surprised if Texans have the best defense in the NFL. That didn't strike me as particularly bold. I mean,
that's,
I guess,
not a bold one. Yeah.
It's bold in that there can only be one best. Mm-hmm. Like if they're truly the best, like we wouldn't be disappointed if they're third or something like that. He's saying the best, but that one didn't pop for me as being bold. I'm like, no, I expect them to be excellent this year. Now this one surprised me, and I think it might surprise you as well. And it might surprise some of our audience. For the Colts, don't be surprised if the Colts pull an upset and win the AFC South.
Yeah, that would surprise me. That would surprise me. I think the Jaguars, if there's a darling that or whatever, if you want to pick somebody to upset the Texans, division favorites don't win the division all the time. Every single year, there's somebody that falters. The Colts just have. I guess the Colts, they've got really a potentially scary group of skill players. Their weapons on offense could be scary. The question is that you've got Daniel Jones being the one that ties it all together.
Yeah.
And that's where I just don't know. The Colts defense also could improve. And it wasn't like they weren't as bad. Remember, they started off the season really, really bad.
Yep.
And then they fixed some things up. So you know what? That's not as glaring as it's not as glaring as Tannenbaum saying that the Titans are going to win the division.
Oh, we'll get
Mike
to
Tannenbaum
him.
On ESPN said that the Titans are going to. That's a more glaring.
Yeah,
one.
We've got that audio in the next segment. We'll get to him. I will say this, and you know, maybe I should have saved that for when we play Tannenbaum. I would pick the Titans before I pick the Colts, just based on the upside and the unknown of Cam Ward. The same way nobody was picking the Texans the year that C.J. Stroud took them to the division championship a couple of years ago. There's no upside with Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones. We know what they are. They're not good. I don't think Shane Steichen's going to make either of them good either.
And with Cam Ward, he's playing in a scheme that when executed properly, there's a lot of similarities to Shanahan's scheme that they're doing there, that it can get the best out of an inexperienced quarterback.
Correct.
And you can kind of simplify things for him and get the most out of what he can do as he's learning how to do all of the other elements of being an NFL quarterback. That's a huge wild card, and there's no film on him. So go back in any of the, you know, RG3 as a rookie compared to how RG3 would be later in his career. There's some things you can't prepare for until you got a bunch of film on it. And Cam Ward could end up being that guy at the very least. And then who knows how good he ends up being in future years.
Got a couple more here. I want to bounce these off you. Don't be surprised if, again, these are bold predictions from Dan Graziano of ESPN. Don't be surprised if the Bengals return to the AFC title game. I think that is a bold, that's bolder than the Texans having the best defense in the NFL. The Bengals defense, I don't care that they got Trey Hendrickson back in the fold. He was in the fold last year, led the league in sacks, and that defense stunk. And they haven't done anything to improve that defense really in the offseason, other than they hired Al Golden as their defensive coordinator. he was a DC at Notre Dame last year, but that's a big jump from college to the end. There's nothing there where I go, oh, this guy had a great defense at Notre Dame. Boy, he's going to turn the Bengals around. And the AFC is tough, man. Like you're talking the AFC title game. That means you're talking about the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens. I'll throw the Texans in there because I think they're as good. I think they're on the same level as the Bengals. I know the Bengals get a lot of love because Joe Burrow had an amazing season last year.
Joe Burrow, I don't know. I feel like we're on a collision course to him being the next Bengals quarterback that says he's either going to retire or play elsewhere.
He's Carson Palmer.
I saw some Bengals fan thumping his chest in a group of Texans fans. He had entered the replies of some tweet, and I was just kind of perusing it. I never participate these days. But he's thumping his chest about his organization versus the Texans, which, A, like, if you really want to go how the Texans have dashed the Bengals' dreams in the playoffs or whatever. But you think about how you think about the Bengals right now, where you think, okay, yeah, Joe Burrow, credible team and everything. Sean, they had a stretch of 2 years where starting in 2018, they were 6-10, then they were 2-14, then they were 4-11, then boom, they go to the Super Bowl, boom, they go to the AFC Championship. And then the last 2 years, they're 9-8. They're 9-8.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a golden era of 2 years for him. And as great as Joe Burrow is or can be, right now I'm kind of back to just looking at them as same old Bengals.
Same old Bengals.
Great, great. You got some great skill players. What are you going
to
do with them?
They're going to be. I'll say this about them. This doesn't correlate at all to getting to AFC title games. If anything, there's a negative correlation. But I would say if I didn't have a dog in the fight in the NFL and I was just sitting down to watch Sunday Ticket every Sunday, I'd watch Bengals games. I mean, they're going to be 38-35 every single game. They're going to be fun as hell to watch.
Yeah,
you know that, and they were last year down the stretch. It's just they couldn't. Joe Burrow, if they had gone 11-6 instead of 9-8, Joe Burrow might have won the MVP last year.
Right. No, and then when I say same old Bengals, like with a lot of teams, that might be they're going to be 3-14 or whatever. No, the Bengals, remember, in the Marvin Lewis era, they went 7 years out of 8 making the playoffs and losing in the wild card every single year.
Yep.
It's just like being good enough to be right there, except they've got a better quarterback this time around.
Yeah. Last one I wanted to bounce off you. This isn't bold to me, although I think Mike McDaniel is on the hottest of hot seats. Don't be surprised if the Dolphins are a wild card contender.
Just dumb.
Yeah, you can be like in week 15, you can be, 6-8 or whatever. You know, I'm throwing a bye week in there.
Well, especially with an interim coach, too. They'll get the interim coach bump or something.
Fire McDaniel?
I think Mike McDaniel probably, I don't know, somewhere around week 9 or so, they let go of the dream. I don't know.
Do you want to do our NFL first head coach fire death pool tomorrow on the show? Okay.
Did I win it last year? I won it I wasn't happy about it.
You had Sala.
Yeah, because I didn't think Sala was going to be deserved going into last season. I didn't think Sala deserved to get fired. I think that because he was getting all this criticism for not handling a situation well enough. Of like, in any given week, it was like, why are you not kowtowing to Aaron Rodgers? And then the next week, it'd be like, well, you got to draw a firm line with Aaron Rodgers. And meanwhile, it wasn't like it was his decision or anything else to bring that quarterback in. And and as soon as they cut him, the one good thing they had going, their defense, which he was responsible for, that fell apart too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they fired him.
I'm still angry about winning that last year.
Yeah, no, that was a good pick.
I know. I didn't want it to be Robert Saleh. No. I didn't think he deserved to get fired, but I know the Jets.
Yep.
Now one of my favorite teammates ever, Aaron Glenn, is the head coach of the Jets. You think I get any sleep at night?
No.
No?
Nor should you. You love Aaron
Glenn. I care
about
Aaron Glenn.
Yeah, you love him. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You think Saleh gets another shot?
As a head coach?
Yes. He's a DC in San Francisco right now. Again.
I think he will.
Yeah.
I think that depending on how he spins his experience with the Jets, because there were a lot of things that were out of his control. And yet the one year they were a nearly 500. They were a 500 team while playing four different non-NFL quarterbacks.
The year that Aaron Rodgers got hurt on the fourth snap of the season, they won 7 games.
Yeah.
With Zach Wilson and Tim Boyle and guys like that.
They beat the snot out of the Texans.
Right.
With Zach Wilson.
They did with Zach Wilson. And then they did it last year with an interim coach. Ay, ay, ay. Stop losing games like that, Texans. You want to get, and Hannah kind of talks about that in that article by DJ Bienname. She has the same view I do, which is, you know how they get to new heights? Have a home game in the divisional round. You know what I mean? Like, have a home game. Stop going on the road in a divisional game, and you get home games in the divisional round by beating the Titans at home, by beating the Jets with a janky-ass Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, by closing out games where you've intercepted Jared Goff five times. Don't give up 19 unanswered in the second half. Talking to you, Texans, all right? Don't be surprised if Oh, I like this.
Don't get swept by the Athletics.
Don't get swept by the Athletics.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. People are sending in some "don't be surprised if ... right now. Don't be surprised if ... Seth wins the mile race.
Oh hell yeah!
Sports Radio 610.
I won't win it. Bajani will beat me on that one. But as far as beating Clint Sterner, it's a. Let me read you a text from my brother, because my brother is a bigger guy. And he's done Ironman triathlons, you know, and like the, he and I have both kind of delved into that world of being not fit for endurance events, but just liking the challenge of endurance events. But I've got this extra motivation now, too, because I think I don't think my brother thinks this is legally binding, but I was texting back and forth with him about like what should I set as a realistic goal and everything. And he said that if I run a 7-minute mile, quote, I'll give you $10,000 if you do that. Unquote.
Wow. When your brother does well, he wouldn't be like emptying his 401k or anything.
No, no. But I don't like. I don't know. I've got it in writing right there. That's a legitimate text from my brother.
It's a text. Now, is that an incentive for you? That's not a bet. Where if you don't do it, you owe him $10,000.
I'll make. You know what I'm going to do is I'll guilt him into giving $10,000 to the charity of my choice.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
If he does give it to me directly, I told him to make it $9,999 so we don't have to get the feds involved.
And, yeah, good job.
Just, you know, wire that over just shy of $10,000.
That's right. Someone texts in, you can't fade that Zaza mentality.
I'm shooting. Right now I'm currently training. I'm going to have to talk to your daughter Judy's boyfriend, Charlie.
Oh, to Charlie? Okay, Judy's already committed to put a program together for you.
A program together for me? She knows that I'm bone-on-bone arthritis.
Told her everything,
knees.
Man, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing like basically some hardcore interval and hill training. I suspect that's what she'll tell me.
Yeah.
And then supplementing it. I'm shooting my sights on a 6-minute mile.
Six? I'm gonna be,
I found a 250-pound guy who ran a 6-minute mile.
Okay.
And like now that I know it's possible, was he 24 years old? Yes, sure he was.
It's all right.
Had he been training for that, and was he a former track athlete? Of course. But now that I know that it's possible, I will be laser focused on running a 6. You hear that, Clint Sterner?
Oh.
Now, the first time when I beat Clint, I'm not going to have to run a 6-minute mile.
No.
I think I might just kind of tease him and let him lead the first. Maybe I'll let him lead the first 1,400 meters, and then I'll reel it in. I'll let him have like a 50-meter lead right around that half lap to go, and then I'll reel him in.
And you'll get him. I was listening to their show. I was on my way up here. We had our fantasy draft up here, our Odyssey fantasy draft at 3 o'clock, so I was listening to them in the car, and I think your commitment to doing a 7-minute mile has rattled Clint a little bit.
Oh really?
Yeah, yeah. He was like, "Chief, he's saying, man, I think the reason Seth can do it, you know why? He's a little crazy. He's a little crazy.
I don't care about the pain. And I love the pain.
I love it so
I
much.
Love it.
I love it so much. It's my last name. My name's actually Seth Smith. Ron told Clint on the air that Judy, my daughter, was going to put together a plan for you, and Clint's like, "That's the beginning of crazy, Chief." and Clint was even at the point, too, where I was listening, and he's like, he was shying off of the 8-minute mile. He's like, "When I said 8 minutes, I really meant like, you know, eight something, you know, like be in that eight, you know, the first number would be eight." And I'm like, "Oh, Seth's in his head."
I did 12 hill interval runs yesterday. Just to let you know.
When was the last time you did? When was the last time you did that?
Maybe like 10 years ago or so. Yeah.
Yes.
And Sean, this is the key. This is where I've matured.
Yeah.
You know what? I felt I wanted to do 16, but I was like, nope. I'm gonna
dial it back.
Back off. Injury prevention. And it's not even injury prevention. It's not making my current injuries any worse. I'm gonna back off a little bit. I'm gonna be mature about this. Yeah.
This is no disrespect. How big was the hill?
I was doing a minute of running uphill.
Okay, so it's a big hill.
I tried to keep a steady pace.
Yep.
Until, yeah, like I did 1 minute of running up the hill, gotcha, then walk back down, then run up again. And again, I've matured. I'm, yeah, like, I'm not, I wasn't, I could still stand and breathe and everything at the end of it. It's trying to keep a consistent pace.
Did you, yeah, go to the top of the hill, or was it such a big hill it took a
minute? It's such a big hill that I was just, yeah, I was, okay, just perpetually running.
Gotcha.
Parking garages are good for that. So in Houston, people, yeah, ask, like, hey, where do you do that? The parking garage across the street from us is
no
a good
doubt,
place for that.
No, yeah, doubt. No doubt. All right, man. I think the public is ready for this. I mean, you're in Clint's head right now, just so you
I'm
know.
Kind of like, yeah, I mean, I've almost. Beating Clint is the one thing, but now I've kind of just taken on the challenge of I've got bigger and better things to do. That'll be kind of my preliminary as I work up towards the 6-minute mile.
Yeah. It's good too, Sean and Seth, because he says it in that Clint swagger, so it sounds hilarious and so serious at the same time. It's going to be fun. Okay, and now we're getting a bunch of texts telling you who you look like. Seth, has anybody told you you look like Rosie O'Donnell?
Pre or post plastic surgery?
That's right.
Oh wait, no, I'm not thinking of Rosie. I'm thinking of Roseanne Barr. Yeah. We had a comedian in once a long time ago, and it was after Roseanne Barr had gotten her cheeks done and everything. Yeah. I'm like, dude, just set aside everything you know or feel about Roseanne Barr and just look at her face. Yeah. She looks kind of hot. And the comedian, I don't remember the comedian was, but he was like, I will never forget you or this conversation.
Yeah,
what,
yes,
the hell are you talking about?
Be memorable. Be memorable.
You know, you got to set aside everything. Set aside whatever you feel about Roseanne Barr and just look at this picture of her.
I'm not going to do that.
That is a potentially, just from this camera, okay, angle, that's a hot woman right,
okay,
there.
Now I'll do it out of curiosity, but I don't, yeah, want to. All right. We mentioned this. Take a Mania preview. We got Take a Mania tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Does this take make the cut? Seth alluded to it before. We'll play the audio for you. Got to remind you, too, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610, presented by Paramount Plus. Can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.